Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
It's the evening of February 15th, 1898, in Havana Harbor, Cuba, on board a U.S. Navy second-class battleship. Settled inside his quarters, Captain Charles Sigsbee sits at his desk composing a letter to his wife. As he writes, he can hear a young bugler on deck playing taps, a song used to signal lights out for the men on board. Sigsbee briefly lays down his pen and listens to the familiar notes. He finds them quite beautiful in the stillness of the night. Captain Sigsbee is in command of the USS Maine, an armored naval ship which has been anchored in Havana Harbor for 3 weeks. The ship's assignment is to protect American citizens living in the Spanish colony of Cuba in the event hostilities should break out. For decades, a bitter conflict has been simmering between Cuban rebels and their Spanish rulers. Although America is not directly involved in the conflict, public sympathy in the United States leans toward the rebels. But Captain Sigsbee is under orders to keep the peace with the Spanish while present in the harbor. Under the electric lights of the cabin, Sigsbee picks up his pen and writes to his wife that all is well. He's a veteran officer whose career dates back to the American Civil War. His instincts tell him that his time here in Cuba will be uneventful, in no small part because the USS Maine is an intimidating 6,000-ton warship equipped with powerful 10-inch guns. The Spanish would be foolish to attack it. Soon, Sigsbee wraps up the letter and encloses it inside an envelope. But then, around 9:40 p.m., Sigsbee's peaceful evening is interrupted by a deafening explosion. He's thrown from one side of his room to the other. Landing on his bed, he feels the entire vessel lurch forward as the walls around him rattle. The electric lights flicker and then cut out, leaving him alone in pitch darkness. Sigsbee hears the loud groan of metal as the ship begins to tilt. In the pitch black, he smells smoke filling the room. He knows if he doesn't move fast, he will likely suffocate. So he scrambles for the door and makes his way into the dark, smoky passages in the belly of the Maine. Sigsbee is desperate to make it above deck so he can take control of the situation and try to save his ship. But Sigsbee's efforts will be in vain. Soon the USS Maine will sink in the harbor. Captain Sigsbee will survive, but hundreds of his men will not be so lucky. In the chaos immediately after the explosion, as Sigsbee realizes his ship is lost, his mind finally turns to the question of who did this. In the days, weeks, and even decades after, what happened to the USS Maine and who is responsible will remain a subject of debate long after the deafening explosion ripped through Havana Harbor on February 15, 1898. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is February 15th, 1898, the sinking of the USS Maine. It's February 15th, 1898 in Havana Harbor, moments before the explosion. On the deck of a merchant ship called the City of Washington, a group of American officers smoke Cuban cigars and enjoy the evening air. But suddenly, the dark night is lit up by a gigantic explosion, close enough for the officers to feel the heat on their faces. They look out across the harbor and see a fireball plume into the sky above the USS Maine, anchored further out at sea. The officers cry out in alarm as debris shoots up into the air. Fragments of wood, steel, and concrete rain down onto the surrounding boats, including their own. The crew on board the City of Washington watch in horror as thick black smoke pours out of the Maine. Then they hear a series of smaller explosions from inside the ship. They can see men hurling themselves overboard to escape the furnace. The Washington's commanding officer, Captain Frank Stevens, gives his crew orders to dispatch lifeboats to the blazing ship. But debris from the explosion has smashed into most of the boats, hindering their rescue attempts. Meanwhile, inside the USS Maine, Captain Sigsbee shouts orders into the smoky blackness, unsure if anyone can hear him over the deafening sounds of destruction. As he makes his way up a steep incline to the rear of the ship, the Maine lists dangerously to the port side. He can hear water rushing in from all sides. If he doesn't get out of the belly of the Maine and onto deck soon, he will likely perish with the ship. Sigsbee doesn't know what caused the explosion, but it's obvious from the ship's tilt that the Maine was struck on her bow. Whatever might have hit her, it must have ignited the ammunition stored below deck. Sigsbee can hear the sounds of continuous explosions as the more than 5 tons of gunpowder it holds erupts and bursts. As Sigsbee makes his way up the incline, his thoughts are fixed on his crew. Most were sleeping in their bunks near the front of the Maine, where the initial explosion occurred. There's no telling how many were killed. Groping his way up the incline, Sigsbee finally forces his way out onto the deck near the rear of the ship. He's pleased to find that many of his officers have survived. Their quarters, like his, were toward the ship's stern, far from the point of detonation. The billowing smoke and flames makes it difficult to see the true state of the Maine, but there is no doubt the ship is sinking fast. From below deck, Sigsbee can hear the sounds of men screaming. Grabbing the starboard rail for safety, he peers overboard and looks down into the Black Sea. There he sees faint shapes thrashing around in the water, men who have either jumped or been thrown overboard by the blast. His officers have already begun lowering lifeboats into the water to rescue them, but most of the lifeboats were destroyed in the explosion. Only 3 remain intact. In the midst of this bedlam, Sigsbee remains calm. Even though the ship is sinking, he is confident that the harbor is shallow enough that much of the stern will remain above water. But the deck at the back of the ship is on fire, so Sigsbee orders his officers to man the fire hoses and put out the flames. But then Sigsbee hears something in the distance. Hoping it might be rescue, he turns to the source of the sound. He can't be certain, but it sounds like people are cheering. He considers the possibility that he's imagining things. The thought of someone out there in the darkness relishing this disaster enrages him to the core. Until now, Sigsbee has been too busy fighting for survival to wonder whether or not this was an accident or an act of sabotage, perhaps from an underwater mine. For the first time, Sigsbee begins to wonder who might be responsible for the attack. But there's no time to solve the mystery now. Sigsbee looks out over the water and sees lifeboats from other ships in the harbor. Help is on the way, so he gives the official order to abandon ship. Soon, shivering sailors are pulled out of the sea and rowed away from the blazing wreckage. Sigsbee stays behind until every single living crew member is rescued. He is the last man to leave the USS Maine alive. As the sailors manning Captain Sigsbee's lifeboat row him away from the scene, Sigsbee gets his first full view of the sinking vessel. By now, the bow of the ship is fully submerged, and the rest of the Maine is engulfed in flames. Although Sigsbee still has no idea how this terrible event occurred, he knows one thing for certain. The American people will be outraged. The press will be in a frenzy, and politicians in Washington will be looking for someone to blame. The American government has been considering military intervention in Cuba for some time, and Sigsbee knows that if it's discovered Spain played any role in this explosion, there can be only one outcome: war. It's February 15, 1898, in Havana Harbor, on board the American merchant ship City of Washington. As crewmen help Captain Sigsbee up from a lifeboat, he is greeted with a salute by Captain Stevens, the commander of the City of Washington. Sigsbee returns the salute and thanks Stevens for the swiftness of his crew's actions with the lifeboats and for setting up a makeshift hospital for the wounded. Soon, Sigsbee is informed that approximately 100 men were rescued from the Maine. Hearing this, Sigsbee's heart sinks. He had 365 men under his command. Almost immediately, Sigsbee heads to the captain's cabin and composes a telegram to the U.S. Naval Department. He informs his commanders that 266 men died as a result of the explosion. He relays the details of the tragic event, including that he might have heard people cheering from the shore as the ship burned. He's careful to state that he couldn't see who was cheering and that he might have been mistaken. Sigsby understands how volatile this situation is. The newspapers at home are already hostile to the Spanish government over their severe and brutal suppression of the Cuban rebels. And there are many politicians in Washington who've been desperate for an excuse to go to war with Spain. Now they may have one. Later that night, Sigsby tries to fall asleep in his quarters on board the merchant ship. But he is kept awake by intermittent explosions still booming from the main and the sounds of wounded men groaning throughout the night. Early the next morning, Captain Sigsby receives a visit from high-ranking Spanish officials. General Solano, a distinguished officer, conveys his deep sorrow for the many American lives lost. He swears, as a man, an officer, and a Spaniard, that the Spanish authorities in Cuba know nothing about what caused the tragedy. And after his conversation with Solano, Sigsby is inclined to believe that the Spanish government is not responsible. Solano not only seems sincere, but Sigsby doesn't see what Spain has to gain from going to war with America. The next day, on February 17th, the Spanish authorities hold a funeral for the first 19 bodies recovered from the wreckage. A procession of hearses winds its way toward a local cemetery. Huge crowds line the streets to pay respect for the American dead. Even the Bishop of Havana attends the service. Captain Sigsby later writes that no greater demonstration of sympathy could have been made. To Sigsby, it seems obvious that the Spanish are going to great lengths to show that they had nothing to do with the disaster. But as he closes his eyes in prayer during the service, Sigsby knows the U.S. government isn't yet convinced. Even now, as he sits in the church praying, American divers are exploring the wreckage to recover more bodies and to determine what or who caused the explosion. Back in America, many in the press have already decided that the Spanish government is responsible. Notably, the New York Journal, owned by wealthy media magnate William Randolph Hearst, indulges in sensationalist yellow journalism, casting Spain as the obvious villain without a shred of evidence. The Journal, and many other publications like it, use eye-catching headlines, gross exaggerations, and even fabrications to push anti-Spanish sentiment. The American public is already biased against Spain, and these sensationalized reports of the USS Maine only add fuel to the fire. Soon, many Americans demand a war of retribution and rally around a slogan that encapsulates their rage: "Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain." But in Washington, U.S. President William McKinley takes a more measured approach. McKinley orders the Navy to convene a court of inquiry to launch an investigation into the cause of the explosion. On March 20th, the court of inquiry determines that the Maine was likely blown up by an underwater mine and that the Spanish are the likely culprit. But though they present no evidence to substantiate this determination, Congress will authorize President McKinley to use military force. McKinley gives Spain an ultimatum: give Cuba its independence or suffer the consequences. And when Spain refuses, the United States Congress declares war. The Spanish-American War, as it comes to be known, doesn't last long. After less than 3 months of land and naval warfare, America will emerge victorious. The Spanish government will be forced to cede territory to the United States, including Puerto Rico and Guam, and the Cuban people will earn their independence. But regardless of the naval court's findings, the truth behind the USS Maine's destruction remains a mystery that will hang over history for decades to come. It's late November 1911 in Havana Harbor, 13 years after the USS Maine exploded. At the site of the wreckage, Rear Admiral Charles E. Vreeland inspects the cofferdam, a watertight enclosure that's been constructed around the remains of the USS Maine. The Spanish-American War is long over, but the question of what caused the USS Maine to explode and who is responsible is still the source of much debate. There are many, inside and outside of the American government, who do not believe Spain was behind the explosion. And as a result, Navy officials named Charles Vreeland head of the so-called Vreeland Board, a second court of inquiry charged with investigating what really happened in Havana Harbor over a decade ago. Today, Vreeland is in Cuba in hopes of solving the mystery. As they work, Vreeland's team of engineers are also able to retrieve more of the crewmen's bodies. Eventually, they will be returned to America for burial at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. And once the investigation is complete, the remains of the USS Maine will be towed further out to sea and sunk in the depths. But by early December 1911, the Vreeland Board finally arrives at a conclusion. It agrees with the previous inquiry that the Maine must have been struck by some kind of mine or underwater bomb. But many in the U.S. Navy still aren't satisfied. These skeptics argue that because no trace of an enemy mine or any other bomb has ever been discovered, it is wrong to assume the ship was deliberately attacked. And as decades pass, this uncertainty looms and festers until finally one high-ranking admiral takes matters into his own hands. Over the course of his life, Admiral Hyman Rickover became fascinated by the story of the USS Maine, and in his study of the event, he remained skeptical of the previous inquiry's findings. And so, in 1974, Admiral Rickover launches his own private investigation. He comes to the conclusion that Vreeland and the original Naval Court of Inquiry both got it wrong. Rickover believes that the explosion was caused by a spontaneous combustion inside the ship's coal bin, and concludes that the USS Maine incident was nothing more than a tragic accident, but one that started a war. In the 124 years since the USS Maine sank into Havana Harbor, there have been countless investigations and boundless conspiracy theories about what happened and who's responsible. In the end, the truth remains a mystery. But regardless of whether the sinking of the Maine was an accident or an act of aggression, there is no doubt the explosion changed the course of history for Cuba, Spain, and America. In its time, the slogan "Remember the Maine" was a rallying cry for war. Today, it is a reminder of the 266 men who lost their lives in the tragedy that occurred on February 15, 1898. Next on History Daily, February 16, 2003, five thieves break into the vault of the Antwerp Diamond Center and pull off one of the biggest heists in history. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily. Hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Music and sound design by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by James Benmore. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.
Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.